The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of the staff or management of KTEP, its underwriters, the University of Texas at El Paso, and or the UT Board of Regents. Welcome to another edition of El Paso Primetime. I'm Dennis Wu, sitting here with Ken Hudnall, noted author, an internet radio host. First off, welcome.
Thank you.
Let's go ahead and catch people up to what you've been up to. I know we're heading into the Labor Day holiday, so let's backtrack to the 4th of July holiday and the UFO Festival. How did that go?
It went great. The museum and the city are now working together hand in hand, so it was a phenomenal event.
When you go to things like the UFO Festival and you celebrate the notion and the idea of aliens living amongst us, basically, it's a controversial topic. Those who believe in the topic, you know, have done quite a number of documentaries. You've written a number of books about it and whatnot. Mm-hmm. When you go to a UFO festival or a festival that celebrates that kind of a lifestyle, do many people embrace it as a novelty, or is this a reality for these folks?
Probably 40% are so serious it's scary. And the other 60% are just there for a good time.
Okay. You know, everybody talks about the 1947 Roswell incident, but there have been other incidents in New Mexico over the years. One of them that strikes me is the Aztec New Mexico incident.
Yes.
Four Corners region, people seem to, as I recall, talk about it in terms of harmonic convergence.
Mm-hmm.
What is it about that region of the country that attracts more notoriety than other parts of the country?
It's considered mysterious. It's considered an area where anything can happen. You go from Sedona, where people go to become one with nature. You go to the Four Corners, where, as you mentioned, the harmonic convergence. You come down to southern New Mexico. You've got truckers reporting UFOs landing in the middle of highways. Aliens trying to hitch rides. I mean, the list just goes on and on. There's even a Mexican Roswell that involves El Paso.
How long ago was that?
In the 70s.
Oh, let's bring everybody up to speed. This really intrigues me.
According to the story, a private plane took off from El Paso and actually collided with a UFO. Both crashed in Mexico. We, of course, offered to come help the Mexican government recover whatever it was, and they said, thank you very much. We got it under control. They sent their first responders in. We were, of course, monitoring the channels, and we sent a reconnaissance unit to keep an eye on what was happening. According to the story, the first responders found the location. They examined it. They put the UFO on a lowboy and started for the highway and stopped. And according to the story, as the reconnaissance unit watched, one by one, the first responders began to collapse until there was no one living around the truck.
Hmm.
Radio communication was made with a unit waiting here on this side of the border. They immediately went in, hooked helicopters to the UFO, flew it north, stacked all the bodies on the bed of the truck and supposedly fear of contamination, and burned them. And then the UFO that was brought to this side of the border, supposedly kept at Fort Bliss, disappeared into the great unknown, probably either Wright-Patterson or Area 51.
I have a question about the disappearances of all of these things and the semi-willingness, so to speak, of the Air Force in 1996 to finally release a lot of these papers, how sanitized were those reports before?
Oh, very
before?
Much so. I was sent a copy of a report that was supposed to be the end-all, be-all of Roswell, and more of it was blacked out than not. Also, keep in mind that quite often, in military parlance especially, what you say and what you mean and what the truth is are sometimes three different things.
Mm-hmm.
No one has ever yet said, beyond a shadow of a doubt, what exactly crashed at Roswell. I mean that from the government. I've seen reports that say that it was a test vehicle using POWs. I've seen that it was a weather balloon with a dummy on board. I've had people look at me in all sincerity and say, no, I got there shortly after it happened. It was a flying saucer that crashed, and I saw the bodies. I mean, no matter – if you get 15 people in a room, you're going to get 15 different stories.
Sure. I guess the collection of books that you've written over the years is a collection of a lot of these stories, not necessarily all about UFOs, but about ghost hunting, mm-hmm. Apparitions, things that go bump and grind in the night.
Oh, yes. I've written about UFOs, secret societies, ancient gods, lost treasure, ghosts from every direction. I'm working on a new one called The Trucker's Handbook, a guide to things that go bump in the night. Because a lot of folks I know are truckers, and they're always telling me weird, off-the-wall stories of things that have happened while they're on the road. Because a lot of them prefer to drive at night. So, of course, if there's something strange to be seen, they see it.
Yeah, and a lot of people who like to poo-poo those notions say, well, you know, that's white line fever, that's this and the other. Apparitions are nothing more than a number of over-the-counter narcotics in order to try to keep them awake, you know, that sort of a thing.
Yeah.
But let's face facts here. I mean, really and truly, there are things that are out there in a different dimension that sometimes will appear in a human's three dimensions.
That's true, especially keep in mind there are certain areas that as far back as you care to research, inhabitants or visitors to those areas talked about odd things happening. Take, for example, Highway 666, which has now had its name changed.
Mm-hmm.
I talked to a gentleman who had adventures there in the 30s, and I asked him to take me up there, and he said not just no, but hell no. He wanted nothing more to do with it. And then there's other people who I lived there for 50 years and never saw a thing. I got the opportunity to know Hans Holzer before he died, and he's kind of the dean of ghost research. And he said a lot of research showed that whether or not you can see ghosts has more to do with the wiring of the brain than anything else. It's like being colorblind.
Mm-hmm.
You cannot see color under any circumstances. People can say that's a beautiful orange wall, and you look at it and it looks gray. And the same is true with UFOs and ghosts and all kinds of psychic phenomenon. You may look at it and see nothing. I look at it and see Casper the Friendly Ghost.
Ken Hudnall is our guest this afternoon on El Paso Primetime. And one of the questions that I wanted to ask you for the longest time stretches all the way back to when they knocked down the two existing smokestacks over at ASARCO.
Mm-hmm.
A few years back, I had the opportunity to sit down on one of your shows over at a radio station, which is nebulous to begin with. But nevertheless, the guest that evening talked about ghosts at ASARCO and Smeltertown.
Yes.
With the demise of the two smokestacks, do you believe that the apparitions, the ghosts that live there have been disturbed?
Oh, certainly been disturbed. Left? No. Many, many times they become attached to the land. That's why in a house that you built 5 years ago on the ruins of a, let's just say, outbuilding of a Spanish mission, you may see a conquistador. Has nothing to do with your house. But he's still going through life as it was for him. And at that particular point in time when he was there, it was something else. They can also become attached to items. Many, many people that I have talked to over the years have, in their travels overseas, have gotten very, very old things to display on the wall. I know one individual bought a parchment that was had to do with the granting of a title. And he said after he hung that up on his wall in his living room, odd things would happen in the house that never happened before. And I spent the night at his house one night, and it was quite an interesting evening.
Do you still do ghost tours around town?
Oh, yes, every Saturday night at the Camino Real, 7 p.m.
It's one of those things that I think El Paso, people who visit El Paso, people who live in El Paso should really partake in one of your tours. I think it's an eye-opener, I believe, to be sure.
Well, I've had people tell me they've lived in El Paso their entire life and never heard the stories that I told, never knew the history of the Camino Real or whatever building I was talking about. One lady said she was 73, been living here since she got married at 20, and had never laid eyes on the Plaza Hotel because she had never come downtown.
Mm.
She'd gone past downtown on the freeway,
right,
but never come downtown.
When you go by the old Hollywood Cafe on El Paso Street and the hotel, that's still there, but it's changed names since. Back in the 20s and 30s, that was a predominantly black hotel. Most of the black musicians who came to town had to stay there or stay in their buses simply because of the situation back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
When you go downtown now, can you feel the apparitions there that lived in that hotel?
Most people that I go in with feel something, but they can't identify what it is. There's one location where one of the old clubs used to stand. It's now a vacant lot. You have to go down an alley, and it's almost like a courtyard, but it's just an empty lot now. And I had heard stories for a long time that if you're down there at a certain time, you can actually hear some of the old jazz. Well, I went down there to see about it, and as I was I waited for an hour. I heard nothing as I'm getting ready to leave very faintly. I heard some of the old jazz I remember my father listening to.
Oh my God.
Where it was coming from, I couldn't tell you, but there was jazz playing.
It's a funny thing, in that area that was known as Chinatown at one time, from Santa Fe Street over to Stanton. As a matter of fact, that Canton Grocery, which turned into Newberry's Chiquita once upon a time, still standing. The building is still there.
Mm-hmm.
But on a Saturday night, I've run into this more than once, trying to catch a bus and going through that area, where I feel like an entire community of Chinese workers are sitting outside of this building doing what they normally did, smoking, talking, and going over what they did over the last few. But as though it was an entire tenement just out in the street hanging out.
Well, interesting you should say that. At the corner of Main and Octavia, there was an entrance to a literal underground Chinese city. I found story after story where people talked about going to the building at that location, down a flight of stairs, and into one of the many tunnels that run underneath El Paso. Octavia and Main is no longer in existence.
Right.
That whole area is railroad yard. But if you go down there, especially at night, you hear a lot of activity that you really can't pinpoint where it's coming from. Mm-hmm. During the day, if you go down there, as I discovered, you'll be surrounded by Homeland Security and ask what you're doing. But at night, especially late at night, when there's not as much hustle and bustle, you hear activity.
Okay.
Some of the other buildings in that general area, friend of mine has a building down there. He runs a direct mail operation. At night, late afternoon as well, he'll hear people talking, standard conversation. But you can't, the walls are so thick, you cannot hear outside activity. And he'll go look. He heard one afternoon, he heard somebody go in the restroom and close one of the stalls. He knew his employees were out on runs, and his secretary was at her desk.
Mm-hmm.
So he went in and said, "Is anybody in here?" And he heard a grunt. So he backed out and waited for who it was. He heard the commode flush. Nobody ever came out. Walked in, stall standing open, nobody there.
Now that we as collective citizens of El Paso, have, in one way or another, have to buy into the idea of this AAA ballpark now, what do you think about the possibility of it becoming a haven for all of those apparitions who've lived in downtown for all these many years, and finally, now that they're ripping up the land, it's disturbed?
There's going to be disturbances. I had the opportunity to spend the night in City Hall on a couple of occasions. There's no doubt in my mind City Hall had ghosts. I sat in the mayor's conference room because I had been told there's a ghost of a former mayor who loved to smoke cigars, and every evening he would go in there and have a cigar before going home. And you hear those stories and you go, mm-hmm, okay, fine. It was about 11:30. I went in and sat down. Next thing I know, I'm smelling somebody firing up a Havatampa cigar. Now, they don't make Havatampas anymore that I'm aware of.
Right.
But I grew up with my grandfather smoking them like a chimney.
Mm-hmm.
No doubt in my mind it was a Havatampa, but there was nobody in that room but me.
I believe this because my home was once owned by the police chief in 1947. Lived there for about 3 or 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
Smoked cigars. And as a kid, I would come home and I would smell cigars in the living room. My mom would smell the cigar in the living room. My dad would come home and kiddingly say, "Okay, which one have you just lit up?" And it went on for years. And then I guess about in the mid part of the 1990s, it all went away. Now that both of my parents are deceased, I smell the cigar. As a matter of fact, I can feel this person having a cigar with me out on the front porch, having a good time. My dog, who I guess is attuned to the chief, knows where he is and goes over and the tail wags and the ears go crazy, and she knows where he is in the porch. It's a pretty neat little thing. And I think a lot of people don't know how to clue into their own ESP.
Well, a lot of people believe what their eyes show them. They're sitting in an empty room. There's nobody around but me. And then suddenly you hear something or you see something or you smell something that's impossible. And many people, that's hard to relate to.
Okay.
I grew up in a house, the original part built in 1815. I was always seeing and hearing things. I thought it was interesting, and I always wanted to know the history of whoever these people were. And my grandmother would tell me I was just crazy. There was nobody there. And then I finally quit bringing it up when, in the oldest part of the house, a lady in an off-the-shoulder gown walked between my grandmother and I. And I said, "Well, who's that?" She said, "Who's who?" She didn't see a thing. Never did see anything. Well, they should never admit it.
Yeah. The reluctance of people who see things, feel things, hear things, smell things, and won't admit it to anybody, that's just vanity, isn't it? Or fear of the unknown.
On the one hand, you can say it's vanity. On the other hand, they have in their mind how the system works. And what they are seeing and hearing doesn't comply with the rules as they understand them. If they admit it's really happening, I've seen people have some serious psychological issues over that.
And yet, people who have grown up with things like that live around Stonehenge. They live around the Inca ruins. They live in the Peruvian mountains. They're all the way down in Tierra del Fuego and know the history of who's been there and how they've been there, including the ancient astronauts. they're all very, very comfortable with having that in the third or, well, the fourth or fifth dimension.
They're comfortable with the idea that nobody dies. Keep in mind, I think it was Einstein that proved that energy once created can't be destroyed. It can only change form. We're, for all practical purposes, energy. We're created. When we die, what happens to that energy? It doesn't go away.
So it gets transformed.
It just changed form.
Okay.
And that form may be, well, instead of vibrating at a speed that you can see, I now vibrate twice as fast. I'm still here. You're still here. We're just not in the same here.
I think people have my opinion, I think people have a real hard time wrapping their head around the notion and the concept that there's even a parallel universe where there's a you and me having a similar discussion, maybe in a different language, but we're still doing it. People who happen to be listening to this in that parallel universe may be doing something and still hearing this mm-hmm. in a different language.
There's a theory that from every decision, two worlds branch. If I walk out the door and go straight across into the broadcast booth, that's one possible future. If I turn left and leave the building, that's another possible future. Which am I going to do when I walk out of here? Not a clue. But after I walk out, now there's two different paths. So if you take that to its logical conclusion, for every decision, you can have multiple paths.
Okay.
At what point in time do we literally fill up all the possible space with multiple paths and they start intersecting with each other?
That makes sense. That makes a whole lot of sense to me. I saw a documentary not too long ago about Einstein's theory of relativity and how a scientist figured out that you can manipulate the theory in order to manipulate time. So in other words, you could do time travel if you understand the theory of relativity and apply it not in three dimensions, but in seven.
Well, now there are stories that Einstein actually took the theory of relativity to its logical conclusion, realized what he had stumbled on, and destroyed it.
Okay.
Because taken to its logical conclusion, and even the Nazis with their version of quantum physics were researching the ability to manipulate time. And there is a story that one of the SS regiments, after Hitler died and Donitz surrendered, they took their families, all the supplies they could carry, went into one of the underground laboratories, dynamited the entrance behind them. Now, would they have done that unless they had an escape route? Mass suicide was never their thing.
Right.
Either an escape route through time or into another dimension.
One of the stories that I had heard about the whole thing, it was a bell-shaped object that they could use to manipulate time. It was a time travel unit based upon something that they had found from a crash of a UFO in 1943.
There was a crash of a UFO in 43 on Spitzenberg Island. There was another one that the Italians found and turned over to the Nazis because they couldn't figure out what to do with it. They created something that was literally called the bell. At the end of the war, when they decided it was time to get everything they could out of collapsing Germany, they stood all the scientists that had been involved in the research up against a wall and shot them. Took the bell, a few very important scientists, and it hadn't been seen since. But the theory behind it was supposed to be the ability to manipulate time and space.
It's a very intriguing topic that I still kind of hold on to, just simply because I want to know what it's like to travel into or back into time. And what would happen, honestly, if a grain of sand moves away from where it was supposed to be. If you go back into time and you move that grain of sand, does that really create a landslide all the way to where you started from?
There was an interesting movie I saw where they were taking people back in time for holidays. But they laid out a very careful path and said, don't deviate and certainly don't change anything. Well, one of them had a – it looked like a butterfly. It could have been anything. You know, come up and hit against his faceplate, and he slapped it down and stepped on it. When they got back to there now, everything was changed.
Just because of that one action.
That's right.
Your radio show called The Ken Hudnall Show can be streamed worldwide.
Yep.
And you talk about this and other topics on that show every night.
I do.
With the amount of material that's out there, give me a rough estimate about how many people will tune in every night to one of your shows.
On average, according to the, you know, with every one of these software packages that you build your radio show from.
Right.
They give you a rough estimate of how many people are listening. I've had nights, especially like with somebody like Jesse Ventura, I've gone over 5 million listeners. On an average night when I'm just sitting there talking, it might be 1 million, it might be 700,000. But a lot of people get tired of the hip-hop barrage and they want to hear some, you know, a conversation.
Right.
So I run in that range.
People who want to listen to the live show, go to kenhudnall.com.
And there's a link that will take you to the show.
Okay. And then you have all of your shows archived.
In fact, there's something running right now that's an archive show. We are putting – I finally got permission from the hosting company to put my full archive up, which is 28 years.
Oh, my goodness. That's a lot of research, a lot of great discourse.
Everybody from Zachariah Sitchin to Mary Higgins Clark, you name them, I have probably talked to him. Whitley Strieber, before he got too important to be interviewed. I mean, I've talked to people that I was amazed they agreed to talk with me. and it was... And when you get to debating the theories and people start calling in and throwing in their 2 cents worth, it becomes a fascinating conversation.
Yeah, it does. So all we need to do is just go kenhudnall.com.
KenHudnall.com.
Very nice.
Now, right now, we're in the midst of rebuilding everything. I had so many hits on my store, the store crashed. And when the store crashed, it brought down the site. So we're getting it back up. The main site itself is back up. We've got to do a lot of fine-tuning. If you want to go directly to the show, bypass the site, you can go to live365.com and then look for Borderland Radio.
Very nice. Ken Hudnall has been our guest on El Paso Primetime. Ken, as always, my casa su casa. So when the new books come out, we'd love to have you back.
I appreciate it.
The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of the staff or management of KTEP, its underwriters, the University of Texas at El Paso, and or the UT Board of Regents. And for the rest of you, have a great and wonderful and safe Labor Day weekend. Louis Signs and Perspectives up next. Thanks for listening to El Paso Primetime.